Okay, we are plugged in and ready to go. And you're listening to the Crowds Files podcast with Adam. And it's September the 1st, believe it or not, 2018. And everything goes up on my website, crowdsfiles.com. So please check that out. Also over on Facebook and Twitter. And there's a YouTube account. And also a Reel.video account that I created the other day, so I put the first video up there. Seems to be more alternative, and I am getting censored on YouTube. So that's a good alternative for people if they want to, for example, to upload podcasts up there. The podcast will go over to iTunes as well. But it's all up on the website, crowdsfiles.com, so plenty to go through. Investigative reporter John Rappaport's back for a podcast. John's been busy, but still putting out some great articles. How are you, John?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Always good to chat with you. As I said, just created a YouTube, a real video account, so I'll put this up there as well. Different sort of format. Running out of areas where we can practice freedom of speech, John. We're getting everyone's getting shut down left, right, and center. And I know you've done some articles about that as well.
Yes.
Speaking to a lot of just general media, alternative media in Australia, they're copying some weird things as well. And as I told you before, YouTube seemed to think that they can muck around with my amounts of views that I get on the videos. And I had that with the one I uploaded that we did about CDC corruption, and I watched it for a couple of days. It was over a couple of hundred, and then it got knocked back to like 26 views. And
so they just artificially changed the number.
They just did it to my last podcast as well on radiation dangers with Janice Barcelo. I put that up, and I was watching it, and it went to just near 100, and then it went back yesterday to 36. And I think with the social media world, it's all about views and status and likes and all of this when you're looking at social media. And I think maybe with people's attention span nowadays, not everyone, but I think when they click on or look at videos that sound interesting, say John Rappaport, CDC corruption or whatever I'm putting up, and they look on that and it's got 20 views, that might put them off. I don't know if you think the same. I just assume that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just screwing with you and making it seem as if there's less interest in your work than there really is, which is a form of fraud on their part, basically. I mean, they are committing fraud on a continuous basis. I wrote a piece, I guess about a week ago, sketching in some connections between Facebook, Google, the CIA, and the Pentagon that go back to the very early days of these corporations. And what people have to understand is, you know, you'll hear something like this. Well, look, Facebook and Google, they're not the government. They're just corporations. So if they don't want to let you have a channel or some way to publish your work, that's up to them. They have the freedom to do that. As if these are just ordinary companies, you know, like somebody who sells tires or something like that, which is the furthest thing from the truth. Because these companies are interwoven with some very serious intelligence agency types in America, as well as Pentagon front group like the Highlands Forum, which is sort of like InQtel, which was a corporation created by the CIA that had money in order to fund technological innovations that could be useful to the CIA. So to say that Google and Facebook are just companies misses the point. In a sense, they are hybrids of government and corporate collusion. And therefore, when they censor somebody, it's more than just a private company doing that. And people have to understand that. It is a violation of the First Amendment in the United States to censor people. And it is a strategy now, as well as in Australia, because you and I have been talking about, for example, a vaccine issue where people who are trying to put out the truth about vaccines are being censored and harassed and mocked and accused of doing all kinds of horrible things. This, too, is a form of censorship. And it's pretty clear in the United States that free speech and the First Amendment applies to everybody. That just because you personally may hate somebody or what they say is not sufficient reason to censor them. That's not the way the Constitution works. The whole idea about free speech is if you're willing to give free speech to people that you don't like, and if you think that there should be open discourse in society about what these people say, about what anybody says. So there's a huge amount of crap being passed around about we should censor this person and that person. For example, no less than a U.S. senator named Ron Wyden, who is now on my list of moral and political idiots of the first order, a long-term serving senator.
Must be a long list.
It is getting longer. He's basically saying that Alex Jones should be wiped off the internet. Not just censored by, say, Facebook or Google, but gotten rid of from this public space called the internet. And, aside from accusing Jones of saying terrible things or hate speech, with no bill of particulars, no case, no evidence, no ledger of specifics, certainly no list of tremendous stories that Alex Jones has broken over the years, important stories. This U.S. senator wants to completely censor him and shut him down. A U.S. senator who gives this amount of attention and obedience, let's say, to the law called the First Amendment of the Constitution, who basically wants to just shrug it off and say, we don't need that. We all know who is speaking the truth and who is lying, and therefore we know who to censor. What a moron. A complete friggin' moron. With an agenda, of course, because he knows very well, this senator, what the Constitution is all about and what the First Amendment is all about. It's just that he happens to be in a political party which has suffered because of revelations exposed by Alex Jones. So that takes precedence for him. And he's able to say, well, just get rid of him. Get him off the internet. In the same way in Australia that you have your major health ministers, like what's her name, Jill Hennessy, and you have Prime Minister talking out of every orifice as if they know anything about vaccines at all when they know absolutely nothing personally and have never listened to any evidence presented against vaccination and have no intention of doing so, but just coming out and saying that anybody who speaks out with any doubts or criticism of vaccines is a dangerous person to the community and should be shut down. So I'm assuming that in Australia you have some kind of version of the First Amendment which should prohibit that from ever happening. Right?
I don't think these people follow the law, John, at all. They seem to just do what they want. It's a rogue government.
Yeah, but I mean, is there a law, a basic law in the founding documents of Australian government which says there is this thing called free speech?
Yeah, there'd have to be, you know, but our government's been hijacked. So it's so hard to find anymore.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah, they think they're above the law here. And it's getting to the point in Australia where it's like Chinese-style censorship, because if you're doing alternative media in Australia, you don't know what the rest of the world's seeing. I don't know what you're seeing. You could be seeing completely different numbers on my YouTube channel. I don't know where my Facebook posts are going. A lot of people are saying that every time I go on Facebook. All sorts of groups are complaining about the same thing, especially in regards to vaccines or anything medical related. They seem to think that their posts are being tampered with, you know, and others aren't seeing what they think they're seeing. So it's a total mind game, but it's all must be these sort of bots in there and algorithms that are just mucking around with everything, you know. But you being in another country, me putting out something here, I feel like we're living in a bubble here. We don't really know how far the government here in Australia have gone with the censorship issue. It's really hard to tell what others are seeing outside of this country. That's what's weird.
Well, I can tell you that we're seeing a great deal of it in America. For example, however he pronounces his name, Stefan Molyneux or Mullinex, Dennis Prager, Alex Jones. These are three of, I would say, major pro-freedom, pro-liberty, pro-responsibility broadcasters. They have all suffered some forms of censorship online. That's just for starters. There are many others. But these are three big ones who have major numbers, and not just in America, but all over the world.
It's huge. They're huge. Same with Mike Adams and Natural News. Had their YouTube videos taken down, so they started the real video as well. So, but it's, as I've said, John, it doesn't matter if you like these people or you like Alex Jones or you don't. It's the principle here, because, you know, he's really the head of the snake if you're looking at alternative media. And for them to go after the head of the snake, I was talking about this on another podcast, John, when we're looking at corruption or pedophiles or, you know, I'm trying to uncover Big Pharma and who's really behind all these psychiatric drugs and vaccines and damage that we're seeing. We can't seem to get to the head of the snake, can we? You know, they keep hanging people out to dry and people get in trouble and they do some news reports and everything, but can't seem to get to the top to cut off that head of the snake and expose pure rotten corruption in the light of day. But they've gone after Alex Jones, who's absolutely huge if you're looking at alternative media. Shows they've got a lot of balls, for sure. But as I said, it doesn't matter if you listen to Alex Jones or not. It's very serious, because I saw that as an opportunity for them to just start chopping everybody in the alternative media. And if you're looking at people like myself just doing podcasts, if they're tampering with people's Facebook pages, you know, and at the end of the day, I don't know if you've looked into it, John, I don't know what sort of technology they really do have. If you're looking at something like Facebook, but it's definitely spooking so many people now. And I think when someone that big as Alex gets chopped like that, anyone doing alternative media is fair game now. I mean, you think, geez.
Well, of course, yeah.
My website or whatever I do can just get taken down, just wiped, you know?
Yeah, Now, the crux comes in. The crux of the matter comes in on the issue of, since this is true, what you're saying, should this stop people from having websites and posting material? And the answer is no. It should not stop them.
Absolutely.
Because if you give up, they win. Why do you think they're doing this in the first place? It isn't just to go after one or two or three people. It's to discourage anybody with a dissident point of view. For example, a anti-state, anti-huge government point of view from having a voice. Excuse me. And so if people self-censor as a result of what's going on, they win. They win.
Sorry.
And I mean, the crux is, what decision will people make? I've mentioned on this show before and on other shows, we need thousands and thousands more independent media voices.
Yeah.
Now, I realize that some people can't write. They just can't do it. They're ignorant because they never learned how to write, because they were never taught how to write. Nobody cared. And they just floated by. But they can talk. They can talk. They can do podcasts. They may be able to do videos. So do it. This isn't some kind of an entertainment game where there's 100 or so people that are sort of out front with alternative views and everybody else is just sort of being entertained. That's not what this is about. This is about exposing the truth on many different levels about many different subjects. And I can tell you, because I've been a reporter for the last 35 years, that never in the history of journalism anywhere has there been more exposure of secrets than there is now. Never. Not even close. So don't stop now. I don't know what to say to some people anymore. My frustration is not, to tell you the truth, as much with the people who are doing the censoring as the people who are just sitting there being entertained by us and doing nothing about it.
Yeah.
At the very least, what they can do with what we're saying right here, right now, is get the link and pass the link along to other people so they can listen and learn and make up their own minds. Everybody can be that kind of media outlet. That's not too difficult for anybody. Develop a list of email addresses, whatever, contacts, and send them links to podcasts that tell the truth. I mean, if you can't do that or you won't do that, you deserve what you get. Whatever is going to happen, you deserve it.
I think
the honest truth.
I think the emoji thing has destroyed that for a lot of people, John. I mean, that's the height of involvement now. If you're looking at social media, leaving an emoji face to an article. I mean, make a comment, share the link. But all these anti-vaccination groups are doing amazing work in Australia, but there's so many people who just don't want to get involved. I've tried to offer people to send me article. I'll send me in something. I'll turn it into an article. I try to get people to comment as much as they can on my website because the top comments are displayed on the front of the website, and it's a big site. In the global rankings, my website is doing very well, considering. I mean, I'm just doing this by myself. I had problems recently, so we do everything we can to fix that up as well. But I find people don't want to get off something like Facebook outside of leaving a little face, a little shocked or a little sad or a little happy face to an article. And it's amazing you put up something that's so important over on Facebook, and you're getting comments, but you're getting a lot of just likes or emojis. And, you know, I just think that's not really helping anyone as well. And I think that also, people seem to get so upset about social media if it may be spying on them or censoring them in any way or whatever. And they do, as you said, they say, I'm going to get rid of my account, you know. I'm sick of this and everything like that. But, I mean, I've been blocked heaps of times from Facebook. I did a podcast on it that I just don't care. And I'm indifferent there. I don't care about Facebook. I use it as a tool while I can to get out information. I don't get offended by anything they do. If they finally want to cut me off, then I'll just move to one of the other social media groups that I'm in. As long as my YouTube channel's up, I'll just keep posting videos there until they cut it off. But I've already moved over to Real Video, and I'm uploading all my same ones up there as well. So I just keep using social media as a tool to get our weapons, but I don't take it personally. And I think a lot of people, John, they take it personally. If they do get blocked or anything like that, they really get upset about it. Like it's, and I can't get that across to people. Don't worry about it. Just use it as a tool to get information out, especially defense sitters, and especially if you're looking at anything to do with pharmaceutical drugs or vaccine dangers or new studies, anything that's really important that comes out. You want to get that out to everyday Australian families, for example, and, you know, people who are on the fence about this issue. So that's what it's for. I don't even really bother to comment so much. I just want to get out content as much as we can. And we've had a huge effect here in Australia doing that. Huge effect with what's coming in from your country and coming out of ours. And the information we're receiving and sending out has been amazing. And that's what has really spooked the government here and what they don't like. They don't like that amount. They're trying to stop that amount of information that's getting out to everyday Australians. So that's what I say to people. Just if you don't want to comment, whatever, just start up a Facebook page, for example, and find good articles like John Rappaport's putting out and post them and get people to share them. You know, don't get offended if Facebook cut you off or something. Just get back on there and keep doing it. And then, you know, morph and change. If they completely cut you off, go on another social media channel, go on Twitter. Just keep posting, because if you give up and go away, they win, as you said. They win. You
know? It's very good advice. Very good advice for people to understand what's happening. And as you say, what really spooks the governments of this world is the fluidity with which the information flows. An article appears on a website, people take the link and they throw the link around. Suddenly that story is up on 100 websites. And then people are reading it all over the world and they're sending the links on and on, and it keeps on expanding and exploding. This is not like the old days of media.
Oh, man.
How are you going to stop that? Well, the only way is with some really massive censorship.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, so for everything they shut down, for every site or every social media locale, 100 should spring up. That's the deal. That's the deal. Now, for example, this week I've posted a piece. Let me see if I can drag it up here. About psychiatric drugs. These are statistics that I came across, actually going back to 2010.
This is another article as well, John. We did a whole podcast on medical related deaths being ignored and Dr.
Yes.
Starfield, and we also did so much on psychiatric drugs, and you've come back and done more articles again. Shows you that something big is happening here. My goodness, and it's not much
More
I
than
you can
one
read
in
about
five
online either.
adults,
It's
more than
huge.
one in five adults was on at least one psychiatric med in 2010.
I'm reading it
More
last
than
night. It's
one in
insane.
five adults, right?
Insane.
And that was 22% increase from the year 2000. I mean, more than 25% of adult women in America were on mental health meds in 2010 versus 15% of men. 21% of women were on antidepressants. They're estimated 5.4 million children in America with a diagnosis of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So the plague here is the over diagnosis and the over prescription of dangerous, harmful drugs. All the psychiatric drugs are harmful. I've written about this extensively over the years. All of the so-called mental disorders are defined and labeled without any defining laboratory tests of any kind whatsoever. And that is very difficult for people to believe, but it happens to be the case, and I've documented this six ways from Sunday. There are roughly 300 official mental disorders, 300 distinct, separate, labeled, named mental disorders. And not one of them has a laboratory diagnostic test that enables the tester to decide whether the person has this disorder or not. No blood test, no urine test, no brain scan, no genetic assay, nothing. Nothing. Committees of psychiatrists sit down and assemble clusters of behavior in whatever fashion they decide. And then they put out a label and they say, okay, we're going to call this oppositional defiance disorder. Is there a test? No. It's insanity. And as if that were not enough, on top of that, what happens is when a person is diagnosed with one of these mental disorders, he gets dangerous, harmful, destructive drugs prescribed. Drugs, for example, like antidepressants that carry warnings that they can produce suicide as well as homicide from the people who take them. I mean, what else do you need to know? What else do you need to know? I've put this together over a period of years. I've shown different levels and degrees of evidence. I've quoted people who have done extraordinary research, like Dr. Peter Bragan, psychiatrist, who discovered the actual collusion and decision between the American Psychiatric Association and the pharmaceutical companies to work together, because the profession of psychiatry in the United States was dying in the 1960s and 70s. And so basically the pharmaceutical companies said to the American Psychiatric Association, look, if you keep inventing new mental disorders with your research, then we will continue inventing new drugs to treat these new mental disorders, and everybody will make out very, very well, except the patient, of course, who's destroyed. And that was the deal that was cooked up. Psychiatry said, pharmaceutical companies told the American Psychiatric Association, we will rescue your profession. We will bankroll conferences. We'll fund a professor chairs at universities. We'll advertise in your journals, take out very expensive ads. We will financially rescue you in return for you discovering many new mental disorders that we can develop drugs for. That was the deal. And it still is. Now, if you want to call that science, I call you insane. That's not science. That's business. That's politics applied to human beings who are not informed and therefore think that they're dealing with real doctors. They're not.
Crazy.
Now, that those pieces of information that I just passed along to you, this needs to be shared. It's on this podcast. This podcast will have a link. So get up, you know, off your mental couch and send this link out all over the world. If there were 100 of you who did that, all manner of new things would begin to happen.
That's right. Yeah. I've been doing some of my own podcasts, John, as well, on, say, YouTube, and just recording my screen so I can show articles like what you do and highlight them and just discuss them, and then put all the links up as well, because there's just so much information. I've got 5 of your articles up today that I wanted to cross-reference and go over, but, you know, we need a couple of hours. But in regards to what you're saying there, I saved a couple of your latest ones in that, but your flu outbreak across America, we were talking about this last week, with this radiation dangers and microwave things and you know, cell phones and Wi-Fi and everything, that this kind of radiation that we're exposed to now causes flu-like symptoms. That could be making people sick, their phones they're holding in their hands, you know, and, you know, all the pollution inside their houses alone. And you were talking in this article, which was very popular, about, you know, all these thousands of respiratory samples taken from flu patients in the United States, tested in labs. This is out there. Anyone can read this. And only a small percentage, really, of any samples show any presence of the flu virus, which we're told. There's this whole flu virus thing going around, and it's like, that's the reason why you have the flu and everything. So again, they like making up names for things as well. But in the article you were just talking about how many people are on psychiatric drugs, you mentioned there again, you've published quotes from well-known psychiatrists admitting there are no diagnostic lab tests for any of their 300 officially certified and labeled mental disorders. And this just runs through everything. And to tie it up with another article you did on July 24th, which really shocked me. I mean, this really got me thinking, this article, and I still go back to it all the time. It's called Who Owns Diseases? And this was a really good article from you, John. I wanted to talk a little bit about this because you really nailed it here. I mean, what they're doing. I mean, people are getting sick, and that made me think, you know, they just come up, you talk about asthma here and stuff and how they just give these illnesses names and then they, you know, come up with drugs, maybe drugs to smother symptoms, but the person's going to have to be on those drugs for the rest of their lives because they don't cure anything. They just give relief maybe, but then they obviously patent that and they own the, these pharmaceutical companies own the diseases, the names they come up for, everything. But it's like, what is disease and what are these people really suffering from, you know?
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Exactly. In the case of the article about flu samples, respiratory samples, it turns out that every year, you know, many, many, say several hundred thousand of these samples from flu patients are sent to labs for analysis. And overwhelmingly, they come back without any trace of any flu whatsoever. No flu virus, nothing. But nobody says anything about
it. Nothing.
Nobody, you don't hear about that.
Just the flu shot.
Everybody continues to say, yeah, it's the flu and get the flu shot and whatever. And even if you believe in vaccination, the theory and everything, you buy the whole story. Explain to me how a vaccine against the flu is going to be successful when the person doesn't have the flu. When the person may be diagnosed with the flu, but laboratory tests show that there's no sign of any flu. Explain that to me. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. And then we expand the discussion out to who owns diseases. So in the case of asthma, for example, we're talking about respiratory distress, the closing or the shrinking of airways for breathing. Okay, well, that name was given to that, but nobody really could say why the airways were shrinking or what the distress was coming from. But by giving it a name like asthma, people assumed, well, it's a disease. It's a singular disease. It has a cause. They just haven't found out what it is yet, and they're working on it. Yeah, they've been working on it for, I don't know, what, 100 years? Still haven't found it. Because right at the beginning, they used a singular label to describe something that could be caused by any number of different things, such as massive air pollution, for example. So the label makes it seem as if they're talking about a disease. But once you look into the label and how it was put there and what they don't know, the whole thing, it turns out that's not the case at all. For example, I forget which pharmaceutical company this is, one of their huge ones. I mean, this is unbelievable. About 6 months ago, opened a factory in China to produce asthma medicine there because there was such a demand for it in China. It would be much more cost-effective and profit-making to produce the medicines in China because so many people had asthma. What does that mean? It means that so much territory in China is polluted in the air, disgustingly so, and that some people are reacting to it by having a tremendous shortness of breath. And the response to this by a pharmaceutical company is to say, well, we have to send more medicine to treat asthma bullshit. What they need to do, these pharmaceutical companies that are presumably in this to heal people, is to publicize the fact that there are breathing problems in many areas of China because of the horrible air quality, and that the air quality has to be improved. And carrying on a campaign like that to embarrass the Chinese government and the Chinese companies that keep producing this pollution would do more to heal people than all the bullshit asthma medicines in the world. But the pharmaceutical companies don't see it that way. They see money. They see profit. They see a new market. They see, let's treat the breathing symptoms, even though we know that when you live in a chemical soup, you can never really get rid of the symptoms. That's how cynical these people can get. People need to know this. This is part of how the disease game works. People are hypnotized by labels.
Yeah.
CDC says there's been an outbreak of swine flu, and most people have never heard of that. In humans. And they go, wow, swine flu, what's that? And the CDC said, well, it's a disease caused by a virus called H1N1, blah, 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 blah. And people go, wow, swine flu, what do I do? Get a vaccine, okay. Then it turns out, I'll make a long story short, that at the height of this so-called epidemic of swine flu, it was discovered, again, that many, many, many respiratory samples from patients were going to labs, coming back with no trace of swine flu or any other kind of flu. So it wasn't swine flu. For the people who were sick, it could have been any number of different things. But it wasn't swine flu. That's a label that hypnotizes people into thinking that there is a disease, a singular defined disease, when in many cases there isn't.
Yeah, it's incredible, John, indeed. I was just looking at one recently, because I've been discussing a lot of this stuff with Jim West, you know. He's written a book on, he wrote an amazing book on DDT and polio, virology versus toxicology, and we were having some discussions with some heavy hitters who were pushing the polio virus. I have to sort of go through Jim, and I just say, look, I'm learning here as well, but to this date, I haven't seen one of them offer anything credible at all to show what the polio virus is. And according to Jim West, it hasn't been isolated. But here again, with the polio virus, we have this name that they've given a mass poisoning. And this has been going on for how long now and how many countries? And it happened in the United States. They poisoned the population with these pesticides and DDT, you know, and people got sick and then they called it polio. But it seems to me, John, it's all about covering up all the time for big industry. You know, the big industry poisons the world populations with these central nervous system poisons and pesticides, and then they cover it up with a name, and then the pharmaceutical industry brings out a magic drug for it. But there was a case recently in Brisbane in Australia, John, where a Brisbane primary school closed after a whole bunch of kids there supposedly got the flu, 182, and 15 staff members all got the flu. And we were discussing this as well, and they were saying it was like influenza type symptoms and this and all of this. And I've seen this a little bit, but You know, as I was talking to Jim West about this as well, he was saying it's sort of like popping corn. You know, people don't, 175 people don't just get the flu at one time, you know, out of absolutely nowhere. And nowhere in this is there any toxicology reports or what these people were exposed to. It was just they had the flu, we're shutting down the school, everyone's got influenza. And you see this, of course, with the Disneyland measles thing and, you know, they blame anti-vaxxers. But you see this a lot in places where clusters of people will get sick and they'll just call it the flu. But it's like, have you looked at the air conditioning systems and the stuff they put in there? Have we looked at environmental conditions? Has there any toxicology reports done on what these people were exposed to? It's never done. They just push the flu thing. And it just amazes me. This was just a case recently, you know, 182 children, John, and 15 staff suddenly getting the flu at one time. I mean, how's that going to happen out of the clear blue sky, you know?
Exactly.
But no reports done on what this may be. So again, I think they're covering again for big industry, in all its forms. Big industry and big money, rules, and human beings are just put down the bottom of the pile and spat on and kicked. It's amazing.
I know we don't have much time left here, but an Allied story, which I've published a piece on before. I'm sure you posted it. Fluorides and the atomic bomb. So where did the whole concept of modern concept of fluoride come from?
Sorry.
It was a byproduct of the Manhattan Project in the United States to produce an atomic bomb during World War II. And we're talking about on the East Coast of the United States, New Jersey, for example, DuPont. Well, animals began getting sick, crops began being damaged, all kinds of things were happening and lawsuits began to be filed against the Manhattan Project. And these suits were formed not around radioactive uranium or plutonium or whatever, but around fluorides. That's what the first lawsuits were all about, because of the horrendous effects. So a movement was suggested and started. What about if we said that fluorides are really good for dental health? And what if we sent somebody around the country giving lectures, public relations, about what a tremendous thing this is for dental health? That's exactly what they did. And that's how the whole business with fluorides being wonderful for dental health started. It started as a reaction and a way of deflecting public attention and blame from a byproduct of the nuclear bomb industry. That's what it was. Essentially, that's still what it is.
Where's it coming from, John? Like, if you're looking at the United States, where's it coming from? I hear China. The fluoride they're putting in, mixing in the water. Because, you know, people will tell you, oh, no, it's the same fluoride as in mountain spring water.
Yeah. The fluorides, yeah, this is...
They do. They do. People do.
And we're talking about a byproduct now of industrial processes.
It's a way to get rid of it then. They're getting rid of it in the water supply incrementally.
Yeah, and they're saying that it's actually a medical treatment.
So they killed two birds with one stone. They're getting rid of a waste product and telling us that it's good for our teeth.
Yeah, exactly. And avoiding lawsuits in the process.
That's right. As we always said, you know, and when you drink tap water your whole life, how can you trace your illnesses that you're going to get back to that tap water that you drank your whole life? Because it's incremental poisoning. You know, I would say... fluoride is a slow, insidious poison over lots of time, you know?
Yeah. That's the game.
Yeah. Crikeys.
And you can see how being able to control the naming and the labeling of disease is such a leg up and a benefit for criminals, high-level criminals, because they can just go into an area and say, yeah, pesticides being sprayed all around here. It's very noxious. It's making people sick. Okay, yeah, all right. Now, here's what we got to do, boys. We got to find a virus. And we got to say that a virus is causing all this, and we have to give it a name, a label, that people are going to buy. Because people will buy it. It's hypnotic. We say, okay, now we have Ubladi disease caused by virus 16X53. Okay, sure, whatever you say. Instead of, let's look at the pesticides. This isn't a disease, it's poisoning. It's poisoning. If somebody drinks cyanide, are you going to say they have a disease? Oh, yeah, he has a cyanide disease. Well, what is that? Well, we're not sure what it is. It might be caused by a virus. It could be a parasite, whatever. Well, might it be caused by cyanide? Well, some people think so, but we really, you know. Because, you see, cyanide is a poison. And if you drink it, you're going to die or get extremely ill. Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, but we're really looking for a virus. That's how insane this is that we're talking about here.
This is crazy. That's right. To throw on top of, before we go, we've got a couple of minutes left, but throw on top of something you go on about as well is medical errors. On top of what we were talking about in regards to your work, that's a whole nother field as well. And I had an article here, which I'll post all these today with a podcast. It was drugs and medical errors killing one of every five Australians. If anyone wants to know what it's like in Australia. So this was a response here from British Medical Journal executive director there. I'll put it up. It goes through all this. And it was to deal with New Zealand as well, Ministry of Health, working on medical errors. So this is documented stuff. And
send me the
just,
link on that.
Yeah, they're noting the prevalence of deaths from medical errors in Australia and New Zealand. So official Australian government reports feel that preventable medical errors in hospitals is responsible for 11% of all deaths in Australia, which is about one of every nine deaths. So if deaths from properly researched, properly registered, properly prescribed and properly used drugs were added along with preventable deaths due to private practice, it comes to a staggering 19%, which is almost one of every five deaths in Australia.
Wow.
So, saying here, put another way, more than 5 million people have been killed by Western medical practices in the last decade, Europe, USA, America, you know, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and 20 million killed or permanently maimed. So we talked about that, and it's very hard, John, to sort of, because people say, well, you might need the medical system one day, you know, and I know if I go and walk in front of a car, I have before, you know, I'm going to have to go and get patched up in the hospital. I know if I go and break my arm, I try to stay away from the medical system, because once you get in there, it's like a cord in a spider's web. But you know, I know that we do need surgeons and we do need the doctors, but we're not seeing any balance here, John. That's the thing. I mean, there's a massive, massive problem here. And as I think, you know, medical errors, not just the psychiatric drugs and all this that we're talking about, but the medical errors when you start looking into it is staggering as well. As you, I talked about with you many times, that Uncle Bob goes into the hospital for a checkup or something and never comes out again. And you wouldn't think years later that it was actually the hospital that killed him. And it's kind of acting like a serial killer in that regard, you know?
And here's another thing. The word errors is something that needs to be analyzed here, because somebody goes into a hospital and gets surgery for a problem and dies on the table. Okay. Now, is that an error? Well, it might be. Might be an error during surgery that was necessary at the moment. But then again, it might have been a surgery that was unnecessary to begin with. You're going to call that an error? No. That's not an error. That is a bad move. That is a wrong move, intentionally undertaken. That's not, oops, I forgot to wash my hands. That is, the book tells us to do this surgery when these things happen. We did the surgery, the patient died. Well, we better look at the book again and see whether there's something wrong with the fundamental instruction. So, error is a slippery word.
Yeah, that's right. Oops, I left a scalpel in him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's.
there's that. Oops, I left a scalpel in them. And then there's some other doctor looking at all this saying, why the hell did you take this guy into surgery in the first place? He never needed surgery. Don't you see that?
Well, they're all going off the medical book, aren't they? And the
Yes.
symptoms, as you said, and they're just, yeah, they're like machines. They're just doing what they've been trained to do, on human beings, which could go any way, when someone goes under the knife there, or it's not needed. Yeah, that's what we were talking about so much. It's so huge, so huge. How many people that could be ha could have happened to, and it's happening to every day. I've been in hospitals, just well, last time, John, when my little one was born, I couldn't believe all the people they were dragging down to day surgery. And when surgeons, top surgeons, have come out on natural news and said that most of the surgeries they're doing, these ones, they're not needed. It's the patients that want them. These surgeries, they're not needed.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe how many old guys they were carting down. I was like, oh my God, I've got to get out of here.
Really, really.
Anyway,
Anyway, gotta go, Adam.
thanks so much, John. Great to speak to you. And
Always great to speak to you.
take care and keep the articles coming. You're a real reporter. We need you. Great work. We'll try and catch up again soon and keep in touch.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.